Running a business keeps you on your toes. Wouldn't it be great if your internet connection could keep up? Introducing Business Class Fiber from Vox. It's super fast, reliable, and highly cost-effective. You get unlimited calls to all SA destinations, and it's scalable. So no matter the size of your business, you've still got room to grow. Get connected with Business Class Fiber from Vox and see what super fast internet really means. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Thank you for downloading the Tech Central podcast. My name is Duncan McLeod. Now, I'm really excited about today's discussion. I'm at MultiChoice City in Randburg to talk to Graham Cumming, head of digital media at MultiChoice, which of course owns assets such as DStv, Mnet, and SuperSport. And we're going to talk about the future of television in South Africa. Graham, there's been significant change in the global and the South African television landscape in the past couple of years, and a lot of it's been driven by the rapid rise of streaming services. That means, of course, that MultiChoice, which built its business on satellite direct-to-home services, is having to adapt to a rapidly changing environment and hopefully help lead that change as well. We've, of course, seen the launch of Showmax, a sister company to MultiChoice in the Naspers stable, and we've seen the arrival of streaming services such as Netflix and, more recently, Amazon Prime Video. And then, of course, there's YouTube, Facebook Video, all of those social media services, which I guess I could call them, which are also competitors in that they take eyeballs away from traditional television services. So in that context, Graham, you head up DStv now. You head up the streaming operations at MultiChoice. Is streaming the future of television, or is traditional broadcasting here to stay?
Yeah, thanks, Duncan. It's a good question, and thanks for hosting me.
It's a pleasure.
It's good to have this chat. Look, I think you've touched on a lot of kind of interesting trends that we're seeing there. Everything from new services, streaming only services, to the impact that kind of social media sites are having on television consumption. But to your question, you know, is streaming the future of television, or is traditional broadcast here to stay? I think, you know, for us, it's obvious that we're moving into a streaming future. We're moving into a digital future, and you know, streaming is going to definitely impact and disrupt the traditional ways of delivering content to subscribers. So that it's absolutely moving in that direction. You know, what are we doing about it? It's, you know, for the last couple of years, we've been investing in services like DStv Now. We've been, you know, streaming SuperSport streams for probably the last 4 or 5 years now. And every year we're seeing good growth on those services. I guess, you know, in our world, we're still hampered by sort of broadband rollout and affordable data. So there's some way to go. I think, you know, traditional delivery of content has a firm place in our future for many years to come, but I think it's definitely going to be supplemented with digital delivery and stream, you know, IP delivered content.
That must be changing quite quickly, though. I mean, I was just driving through the back roads to come here this morning to avoid the traffic on the main arterial roads, and through Randburg, through the suburbs here, just about every street is being dug up. Vumatel, OpenServe, the fibers going in. A lot of people are now connected to fiber, particularly in the northern suburbs of Joburg and I guess parts of Cape Town and other parts of the country. That change has happened in the last 12, 18 months. We've seen this huge investment by multiple companies in last mile fiber broadband infrastructure. I know that MultiChoice, Chris Becker, the former CEO of Naspers, said in the past that he's lamented in the past that you know, that the infrastructure just hasn't been there to deliver these sort of services, but there's been a massive change in that infrastructure in the past 18 months. Are you seeing that translating into demand for more streaming services?
Absolutely. I mean, we're seeing, you know, traffic to our streaming services, DStv Now and the SuperSport websites, we've seen, you know, double and triple over the last 12 months.
Wow.
So we're absolutely seeing the impact of fiber rollout. I think, you know, it's still off a small base, though.
Yes.
I think that's the point. You know, when you look at the subscriber base, you look at the amount of, you know, pay TV homes in the country and how many people we could be reaching, it's still a fraction of that audience. But you're absolutely right. The you know, fiber is rolling out. I think, you know, one of the interesting things that we've noted over probably the last 6 months is that, yes, fiber's rolling out, but it's almost like a lot of people are substituting their DSL for fiber. So you're getting fiber rolled out, but whether you're growing the market as much as one would think we are, I think that's the crux of the mat at the moment. There's a lot of substitution or conversion from DSL to fiber. So yes, the market is growing, but you know, if it was DSL in addition to fiber, that would be a different story. But you're right. We're seeing the uptake. We're seeing the usage of the services, you know, starting to really take off now, which is really exciting for particularly for the digital part of this business. We're investing a lot more time and effort and energy in growing those services. It's good to see it's good to see the take up.
Yeah, you talk to some of the fiber guys, and certainly it's something that consumers talk about as well. You talk about the DSL substitution, but a lot of people also talk about DSTV substitution when they go to fiber. They say, well, I can get Netflix, I can get all these other services online. Are you seeing that happening as well to any degree?
Yeah, I think it is happening. I think that the thing is, it comes down to having the right content, at the right price, and having those options available for your subscribers. I think, 2 years ago, these over-the-top services kind of came into our markets, and pay TV operators around the world felt very threatened, by streaming services. I think that perception is changed somewhat, in that we're seeing a lot of streaming services as complementary to pay TV services. So if you look at the US and the UK markets, for example, a lot of those pay TV households have two or three additional streaming service subscriptions running in that same household, purely because not everyone, there's no one place that has the full spectrum of content.
Sure.
And I guess that's part of the ultimate problem, right? You're going to go to a certain service to access a particular show, but you're going to have to sign up to another service to get a different show. I mean, I think our job as kind of DSTV is to ensure that we continue to acquire and produce the best content possible, and that's our best defense, I guess.
I suppose in the old world, it was if you wanted pay television, the option was MultiChoice. I suppose in this world, and I've certainly discovered it as a consumer, I'm subscribing to multiple services now, because I want access to all of these shows. And because of many of the streaming services are not actually that expensive, you end up adding two or maybe even three streaming platforms to your personal bouquet, if I can call it that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the trend that we're seeing. So I think you're going to see that for many years to come. In fact, it probably will get worse in certain markets. But our job as DSTV is really to aggregate the best content and make it as affordable as possible, and move from a delivery perspective, move with the times, and the move is into the digital delivery, and that's certainly where our focus is.
Now, Graham, I remember from my days in print media, there was always this talk about digital first. It was, a way of getting journalists and editorial production people to think about the internet before they think about the print product. And it was always, in many newsrooms, it was drummed into people's heads, digital first, put the story on the internet before you put it in the newspaper.
Yeah.
Do you need to do something similar? Are you doing something similar here at MultiChoice? Is the approach, streaming, we need to think about streaming before we think about the traditional product?
It's starting to change, Duncan. Yeah. We're starting to experiment with, putting content onto social platforms, for example.
Right. I saw that. Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, we did the Springbok versus France rugby match in 360, and that was delivered to Facebook. Now, that wasn't a feed that you could get via your Explorer decoder. You had to go to Facebook to get that 360 feed. So, and we've also experimented with putting first episodes of some of our content onto platforms like YouTube. So digital first is starting to happen, and we're experimenting with what these social platforms and these digital platforms can kind of unlock from a content discovery and an interest point of view around that particular content. So I think that's certainly where it's moving.
I was interested to see you using Facebook and YouTube as platforms. It was Facebook that you did the rugby France game on. I see Facebook announced yesterday or the day before yesterday that they're going to be carrying the European Soccer Championships on, I think, in North America. which was a really interesting development, Facebook getting full on into sports now, streaming sports. Do you see these services like Facebook and YouTube as competitors? I mean, clearly you don't see them as a direct, immediate threat if you're using their platform to test 360 video on, for example. But what's your thinking around it? Do consumers are using these platforms, so do you go to those platforms because consumers are using them, or do you try and build your own competing platforms to distribute these video products online?
Look, I mean, that's a broad question. I think we certainly see them as competitors from an attention point of view.
Sure.
So, you know, what we know about, you know, certainly our user base, and I mean, these are kind of global global themes at the moment. We know that audiences are spending more time on social platforms. I mean, the numbers that come out of Facebook in terms of, you know, video hours viewed on that platform are staggering. I mean, I think the last stat I saw was something like 100 million hours per day on Facebook alone. So that cuts into attention time, absolutely. What we also know about these audiences are, you know, they're younger audiences and they're mobile-based audiences. So this, you know, this video is consumed on mobile platforms. But we also know that this video is consumed primarily during prime time. So it's kind of like, you know, people are using these platforms and they're consuming this video in addition to watching prime time, you know, TV shows on a linear broadcast or on a catch-up service or whatever it is. So there's the second screen effect happening. So for us, I think that the potential that these social platforms offer is one in which they really assist with supplementing what we're doing, you know, in our content delivery, and aiding with things like content discovery. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're surfing through your Facebook feed and we're able to target specific content at you that may be relevant and get you to tune in to watch that, you know, that Springbok rugby game. Because you're kind of getting a 360 view, but you're not in the thick of the action. Now, if we can use that platform to encourage you to, you know, flick over to SuperSport One and tune into the rugby, that's a meaningful tool for us. So that's how we're using these platforms. I think, you know, if you go back 5 or 6 years, and you know, search engines were your content discovery mechanisms. I think that's almost flipping now, where your social networks are becoming content discovery engines. So. Yes, there's a threat from an audience perspective, and I'm sure that you know, these social networks are going to, you know, we've seen, you know, Twitter getting into sports streaming and looking at specific sports properties, Facebook doing the same thing. So down the line, I'm sure there is going to be competition for eyeballs, you know, around premium content.
Yeah.
Right now, I think it's about kind of using the power of a social network to unearth content on your platform and use them as a complementary type service,
right,
rather than seeing them as a threat.
Yeah, can't ignore them.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was interested in what you're saying about, you know, about the second screen. You know, I certainly see it in my house. We watch television, but at the same time we're looking at our devices. You know, if the TV starts getting boring, the phone gets more interesting.
Yes.
It's certainly the way people consume video content has changed dramatically. I mean, I'm a child of the 1980s, and I remember when I was growing up, we'd all rush at 7 o'clock to watch MacGyver on TV.
Yeah.
The whole family would sit down. Oh, 7 o'clock, the dinner's not ready. We've got to go and sit and watch the MacGyver, you know, because it starts now. We don't want to miss it.
Yeah.
That's changed completely. It's now certainly in my house, it's on demand. We watch what we want when we want to watch it.
Yes.
And I'm sure that's the case for many consumers. So, but we've got these services on tablets, on mobile devices as well. Is the phenomenon of watching television, which has always been a social thing, sitting down on a couch with your family and watching a program, that's changed, right? It's, you know, if your daughter wants to watch something else, she'll put headphones on and she'll watch it on Netflix or DSTV now on her phone while Dad watches something on the big screen TV. Or
absolutely,
it's completely changed. It's not the same experience as it was
absolutely
when we were growing up, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's the, you know, the terminology that we use internally is, you know, in the old world, you kind of, there was a one to many relationship. You know, everyone aggregated around, you know, a single television room, and you spoke as a broadcaster. You spoke to a household.
Yes.
In this new world, it's more of a one to one relationship. And the trick is to kind of build those relationships, you know, try and understand who is in that household and build relationships one-on-one with the individuals in that household and start speaking to them with content and recommendations and preferences that appeal to the individual and not necessarily the household. So you're absolutely right. I mean, the shift is to more of a personalized consumption experience. And I guess that's where, you know, that's where products like DSTV now allow us to reach an individual and, you know, and not just a household anymore.
Yes.
So you're absolutely right. It is shifting that way. Mm.
So live sports, I could imagine, is something that's where linear television makes absolute sense. You don't want to watch, you know, South Africa versus France 3 hours on demand after it happened. You want to watch it as it happens.
Absolutely.
With the rest of the country.
Yeah.
Outside of live sports, though, is linear television going to die?
So, I mean, that's a big question. I think there are, you know, and certainly what we've seen in our user base, there are specific shows that people want to binge watch, and they're likely to do that, you know, using a catch-up service, an on-demand service where they can sort of watch, you know, from episode one to however many episodes we've got stacked at any point in time. But there are also entertainment events, you know, general entertainment events and big productions that have massive appeal for a live audience. Mm. So you take some of your reality shows, you take some of your talent shows, you know, things like The Voice. Mm. Again, they lose appeal. Yeah. After the fact, they're most meaningful whilst they're happening. If the winner gets announced on a Monday, it's kind of, you know, you know what the outcome is. So that, you know, the appeal of watching it live is kind of destroyed in a catch up environment. Mm. So I think there is still a place for linear television. We certainly see a lot of linear, funny enough, a lot of linear streaming on the DSTV Now service.
Right.
So there's
for sport, you know, especially, I'd imagine.
Well, particularly for sport, but also for some of our local content. Mm. So this is, you know, shows like Issy Baya and Binnenlanders. Mm. These are, you know, dailies, you know, sort of soapy shows. These are some of our most popular assets, and you know, subscribers will tune in for those particular shows because they're on a particular cadence. You know,
right.
You want to be current. You want to walk into the office the next day and talk about the episode last night. So there is definitely an element of linear tune-in still happening, and I believe, you know, it will happen for a long time. Mm. You know, we've seen Netflix experiment with weekly additions to, you know, shows like Designated Survivor, for example. They broke the model around, you know, releasing the entire season.
Yes.
At once, and they moved back to a, yes, you know, weekly release, and you know, there's certain psychology in why they do that, and, you know, getting people to come back at specific times and getting people to continue to remain signed into their subscription service.
Right.
There's a reason that they're doing that. So I think linear TV is still going to hold a place outside of sport for a while to come. Mm. But absolutely, you know, the trend is, I'm interested in a particular show. I want to watch as much of that show as quickly as possible, and then I want to find the next thing to watch.
Yeah.
And I guess that's where the bulk of the general entertainment viewing is going to shift to.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting what you say about the weekly releases, because I know Amazon does that on its shows, and I find it really annoying. So what I do is I just wait until the shows are all available, and then I watch.
Yeah.
American Gods, which they're showing at the moment, for example, I've been really looking forward to it, but I've actually deliberately waited until there are 8 or 9 episodes available before I start watching it.
Yeah, agreed. And I think, you know, back to your point around how times have changed, I think, you know, time is precious. You know, we've got days, you know, filled with lots of things to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're going to make some space on a Sunday afternoon
to binge watch.
To binge watch, and that's just reality. That's just, you know, how the world is moving. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah. So, Graham, let's talk about DSTV Now. How long has it been around?
So we're coming up for 3 years.
Okay.
We're coming up for 3 years, and it's been an interesting journey. I mean, we released that product primarily to our premium subscriber base 3 years ago, and the uptake was, you know, the uptake was not as fantastic as we hoped it would be. But what we've seen, since, you know, over the last 3 years, is that every kind of 6 months we're doubling that traffic.
Yeah.
And we've been deliberate in terms of how we're now scaling that product down to the rest of our base. So a couple of months ago, we announced that we would relax some of the eligibility rules around that product. So you didn't have to have an active PVR.
Right.
And now you don't have to just be a premium subscriber to make use of that product. We've dropped it down the tiers. So the extra and the compact guys now have access to their channels. Mm. And I think that's driven consumption. But as we say, broadband rollout has also driven that consumption. Mm. These changing viewing behaviors and habits have also driven that consumption. So, yeah, it's really starting to get into its stride now. And every month we're seeing sort of new records set in terms of usage, which is really encouraging for us.
Mm-hmm. So it's been going for 3 years. I've been using it, I think, since pretty much it started, and I've watched it evolve rapidly in that time. It was quite a difficult product, I thought, to use initially, but it's become quite simple now.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time sort of improving. As we've got feedback from users, we've kind of plowed that feedback back into the product development team.
Mm.
It has improved. The number of channels that we initially launched with, I think we launched with only about 20 channels.
Yeah.
You know, we're currently sitting on, as of the beginning of this week, roughly 80 channels to premium subscribers. So all your major channels are now available.
Yeah.
And the catch-up catalogs in that product have also grown over the last 3 years. So, we maybe launched with about 200 hours of content. I think we're close to 2,500 hours worth of catch-up content in the product now. So yes, it has evolved. It's improved, but there's still a long road. We've still got a lot of work to do on the product.
Let's talk about channels. As an example of perhaps how I became frustrated by it last night. In fact, I watch a show on Business Day Television every Wednesday evening, which I really enjoy, and usually at home at that time, so I can watch it. But last night I wasn't. I got a notification on my phone. Oh, it's time to watch this show. So I thought, let me watch this on DSTV Now. So I fired up DSTV Now and I saw Business Day Television wasn't on DSTV Now. Will you have all the channels on there at some point, or is it rights issues that have prevented you from putting some channels on?
Yeah, it's mainly rights-based. Okay. So we've kind of worked through all of the popular channels on the bouquet and make sure we've cleared those rights. But it's as and when our particular deals come up for renewal, we're negotiating those rights. So kind of the legal team are constantly working at clearing every single channel on the bouquet, and that is the intention. I mean, we've got the bulk of the majors on there already, but I'll take a note and press the legal team to get Business Day TV on there for you, Duncan.
Thank you. The other channel that's of course missing is ENCA, the big South African news channel. Any reason that's not on there?
Again, rights and kind of negotiations to get that on. So, I'm not going to say too much on when we're going to launch it, but it's imminent.
It's coming.
It's coming
good.
Soon.
Watch the space.
Watch the space. Yeah.
Good stuff. And the other question I had around DSTV Now was HD. It's it seems to broadcast in standard definition. I think up to 560p. Is that right?
So on most of our channels, we actually go to 1.2 megabits per second.
Okay.
We've got a couple of the sports channels that go up to 2.3 megabits per second.
Right.
So I think SuperSport 3 is an example of that.
So what quality is that delivering?
So it's SD quality.
Okay.
I mean, it's SD resolutions. And again, it's rights dependent. So a lot of the content for the digital channels, we've cleared SD rights for.
Hmm.
We're in the process of kind of working through that channel list with the suppliers to get the HD qualities and resolutions cleared. So again, it's something the guys are actively working on. We're quite conscious of it, particularly since we launched the AirPlay and the Chromecast support.
Right.
So you're now slinging onto bigger screens.
Yeah.
It becomes more apparent that quality needs to be improved. So it's high on our priority list, and it's one of the things we're working on at the moment. In fact, we'll probably start with the sports channels.
Okay.
And get those kind of up to HD quality.
Right.
But yes, there's a lot of studio content on the rest of our channels, and it's a process of working through each studio.
Is it rights issues once again?
And getting technical clearance, exactly.
Okay.
To actually deliver a better quality stream.
Technically, do you have to do major upgrades to get it onto HD?
It's a configuration issue on our side.
Okay.
Obviously, it has an impact on bandwidth. You're delivering kind of more content per user.
Mm.
So there is an impact there. But configuration-wise, it's pretty easy for us to, you know, to create new profiles once we've got that technical clearance.
Okay, so it's
imminent.
You have to do it on a case-by-case basis, but HD is imminent.
Yeah,
starting with sports.
We all target sports. That's where the bulk of that live viewing is happening.
Yes.
So it makes sense to start with those sports channels.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So you're building quite a powerful product here in DStv Now. Where do you take this? Does DStv Now, at the moment you have to be a DStv subscriber, so you subscribe to the satellite pay TV based service if you want to get access to this.
Yes.
The obvious question is, does this become a standalone product at some point?
Yeah. So look, I mean, you're absolutely right. DStv Now is at the moment it's a TV everywhere product.
Yeah.
So you pay your subscription fee every month. One of the benefits for paying that subscription fee is you get access to your content on these multiple devices.
Yeah.
Going down the line, you know, absolutely, you know, standalone service is something that we will look at. We do a lot of research around how do we package content? What are those right price points? How do we, you know, do we need to have a satellite dish attached to your roof for you to subscribe to DStv? And these are all kind of strategic plans that we're busy working through at the moment. So that day will come, you know, where you don't need to put a satellite dish on your roof anymore. You can just, you know, go to the website, sign up, and get access to, you know, your various bouquets. And even those bouquets may change down the line. You know, it's right now we've got no plans to change those bouquets, but certainly, you know, into the future, if you're looking kind of 3 to 5 years down the line, you know, the way the world is moving, we absolutely need to consider new ways of packaging content and you know, new products within DStv Now. So, you know, right now it's linear services and catch up content. You know, whether we introduce, you know, deeper box sets and, you know, TVOD content to that environment. I mean, these are all things that we've got to work towards. But absolutely, in our future, we will have that day where you don't necessarily need a satellite dish to subscribe to video entertainment.
And this becomes a standalone product.
And it becomes a standalone product, absolutely. But I mean,
how far away is that day?
So, yeah, Duncan, I mean, that's the million-dollar question. I think for us right now, it's that balance between the ability to deliver a quality service consistently at scale versus the efficiency that satellite delivery currently gets us.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're living in, you know, kind of Sweden or Switzerland and you've got 100 megs into your house, and everyone in the market has got 100 megs into their house, I think, you know, that decision would come a lot sooner.
Yeah.
For us, it's the balance between how do we find that sweet spot between the value that satellite delivery gets us. And we're moving into a world of, you know, 4K content. You know, it's on our doorstep. So, you know, when you get to that day, delivering 4K content into somebody's home, yes, it can be done. But to do it at scale, simultaneously and live, is quite a feat. So I think it's definitely in the future. I can't give you a date as to, you know, when you're not going to need a satellite dish, but certainly within the next kind of 5 years, it's in our planning, it's in our thinking, and that's what we're architecting our platform to be able to do. So you know, that's where we're going to get to. I think it's exciting. But you know, to your point around will you still need a satellite? I think certainly in Africa, we see that satellite playing a role in a sort of hybrid delivery model for many years to come.
Yeah,
it is just an efficient way to deliver high quality content, you know, to en masse.
But as a consumer, I'm going to have the choice. I'm going to be able to decide: hey, I want to put up a satellite dish and have a traditional PVR in my house. Or, hey, I've got a fiber connection, I'm just going to get the stuff on demand.
Yeah, that's the idea. If you've got the broadband into your home and you can pull the 4K streams, absolutely, you should be able to fire up your Apple TV and you should be able to connect to those linear streams and that catch-up catalog without the need for a satellite dish. So that day will come.
And of course, you're merging these two worlds as well, because the PVR has a lot of internet functionality built into it now.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a lot of on-demand services available through catch-up and box office for people who consume most of their television, I guess, through the satellite downlink.
Yes.
If you want to watch on demand, it's there.
Correct.
Perhaps not to the same extent as you could get on a standalone internet service, but it's there as an option. And I guess you're going to develop that side as well.
Absolutely. So you're right. I mean, if you go back 4 or 5 years, the reason behind developing a product like the Explorer was that in a broadband starved environment, you could kind of fake the delivery of on demand content, using the satellite. Mm. So you could fake this internet experience, and you could have an on demand catalog, press a button and binge through content without having to rely on linear delivery. Mm. But you're right. I mean, a couple of years ago, we connected that Explorer, and suddenly that catalog, expands past the point of what the hard drive limitation for storing content is.
Yeah.
So suddenly you now have a limitless catalog that you're able to pull in, and that Explorer becomes the gateway device that allows you to have that over-the-top experience. 5 years down the line, you should be able to have a similar experience using an Android over-the-top box, for example.
Mm.
There's a lot of discussion and debate and planning and thinking around how we craft that architecture and how we craft that future and make it relevant and use the power of IP delivery and where it's going. But also try and tap into the value that, if I'm sitting in a home and I do have a satellite dish on my roof, how do I tap into the power of what that thing can deliver and get the best of both worlds?
Mm.
And I think that for us is the sweet spot.
Just out of interest, who do you see as your biggest competitor over the coming years? Is it these newfangled streaming services like Netflix and Amazon and others that are no doubt still to launch? Or is it your more traditional broadcasters in the South African context, your SABCs, your ETVs, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. I think, both types of competitors are attacking the markets from different sides.
Yeah.
So I think it's a combination of both. The over-the-top players absolutely are, that they're creating compelling content. Our subscriber base, is they're looking for great content. Mm. And if we can't deliver them great content, absolutely they're going to get it over the top.
Mm.
So over the top players are definitely a competitor. And we've seen new kind of broadcast competitors coming into our space. So it's coming from both angles, but again, I think that it keeps us on our toes. It keeps us focused. It keeps us focused on what our job is, and our job is to make sure that we've got the best content.
Yeah.
And really that we craft that user experience and deliver that content in the most compelling way possible. So that the old adage of competition is good. I mean, I think it definitely sharpens the focus and keeps you doing what. Focused on your customer, and that's important.
Now, I know a question that many DSTV customers ask constantly is, why can't I pick and choose my channels?
Yes.
And I know that there are real compelling business reasons why you cannot actually do that in a satellite DTH environment. Is that different in the streaming environment? As we move into this streaming world, will it be easier for MultiChoice to be able to offer customers an a la carte type menu of channels that they can then pick? Or is it still come down to a business issue?
It still primarily comes down to a business issue. So, the internet is just another delivery pipe for us.
Yeah.
So it's just another distribution mechanism. It doesn't change the business models in terms of how content gets acquired and what content suppliers require of us.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just for us it's a different delivery mechanism. I think we'll move into a world where we have to consider alternatives for how we package content.
Yes.
Whether we get to that day when you can, if there are 500 channels available, you can pick and choose the exact channels.
Mm.
I doubt we'll get to that day. But certainly in terms of how groupings of channels get packaged and delivered, I think that has to evolve. And We're seeing more mature markets, UK, US markets, experimenting with things like skinny bundles and, taking, out of the 100 channels, maybe packaging 20 channels and making those available at a lower price point. the jury's out as to whether that's working. I mean, it's, you know, I guess it comes down to, you know, do you have the right content at the right point in time for that particular consumer? And, and you're never going to get that right when you, when you're packaging a group of channels. So, you know, having as much variety available as possible is, you know, comes at a cost. So, yeah, I think it's, I don't think we'll get to that day where you can pick and choose exactly which channels you want to watch. But I do think we will see changes in the way content packages are put together.
I wanted to ask about sports as well. There are lots of DSTV subscribers who actually don't watch the Super Sport channels because they don't watch sport. But if you buy the premium package, you're also buying Super Sport 1 through 13 or however many of those Super Sport channels there are.
Yeah.
Do you think that in the streaming world, there might be an opportunity to cater to those subscribers who don't want to actually pay for the sports, but who are paying for it at the moment?
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's something we ask ourselves, you know, internally quite a lot. And, and we do research on, you know, what does that mean for the business model? What does it mean for the subscriber base? Where do the opportunities lie? So it's something that, that we're constantly looking at. We're not ready to launch anything yet, but it's, I mean, it, you know, it forms part of our sort of, you know, continuous strategic discussions all the time in terms of how we package sport and how we make it available and do we do it over the top only. So, but we haven't arrived at any conclusions yet, and, you know, or any firm plans.
Right. Okay. So, of course, there's a streaming service in the NASPAR stable called Showmax. And there's some integration that's already happened between Showmax and DSTV. There's a Showmax button, in fact, on the latest remote from MultiChoice.
Correct, yeah.
What is the relationship between the two companies and how is that going to evolve over time?
Yeah, so look, I mean, Showmax was set up really to serve the non-subscriber market, and you know, it's an SVOD play. We have a very close relationship with the Showmax guys in that, you know, we're part of the same group.
Yeah.
But on a day-to-day level, you know, they sit in a different building, they run a different division, and they're essentially a separate business.
Yeah.
So there's collaboration at the level of, you know, how do we take the value of what Showmax has to offer and bring that into the DSTV world? But they also have the freedom to kind of speak to the non-DSTV subscriber and offer a true competitive SVOD service in the market. So, and you know, I think they've done really well in the last 2 years. They're marketing wise, branding wise, they're a force to be reckoned with in the streaming service sphere.
Yeah.
We do engage with them, but you know, we've got separate teams, we've got separate technologies, we've got separate product roadmaps, and they're considered a kind of a sister company. As you know, they healthy compete with us.
Yeah, they compete, but they also cooperate at the
Correct.
Same time.
Correct.
Yeah. I was really interested in why NASPAS decided to do this as a separate entity rather than build it inside MultiChoice. As an outsider, it makes sense because you're in fact creating something that could cannibalize or even ultimately destroy what's here, which is a legacy broadcast business, although you're building new streaming services here on top of it as fast as you can.
Yep.
So you're innovating as well. But by putting Showmax into by creating a separate entity to focus on this, I suppose it's freed of any constraints that might have been put on it within this environment where management might have said, you can't do that because it's going to compete with that part of our legacy business. And they're, in fact, are free to do whatever they want.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly it. The ability for them to run as fast as they can run in their own environment and kind of make their own decisions and be masters of their own destiny, I think that was the real reason that team was kind of ring fenced and put outside of the MultiChoice City building as it is.
So Graham, just lastly, maybe I could ask you to gaze into your crystal ball and just give us a view of what you think the television landscape in South Africa is going to look like broadly 5 years from now.
Yeah, look, Duncan, I think as we mentioned, there's definitely going to be this shift to digital streaming services. I think we're going to see a lot more take up of DSTV Now, certainly, and other competitive services in our market. I think what we're starting to see is the content windows across the industry are starting to get a little bit blurred. So you're getting competitors creating their own content, and your traditional windows of starting in TVOD and moving into pay TV and ending up in SVOD or library services are getting blurred and mixed up now. And I think that's going to accelerate. Mm. I think, you know, in terms of TV in South Africa, it's clear that, you know, there's, you know, international and what we term third party content has a big role to play. But even bigger is the importance of local content.
Right.
And, you know, continued investment in producing and creating content for our markets. So I think what you're going to see is a lot more investment in local content. It's the stuff that, you know, South African audiences yes. aren't going to be able to find on an Amazon Prime or a Netflix service. They're only going to be able to get it, you know, in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the bulk of the growth in the industry is going to come from, is supporting that original content creation and all the initiatives around it. And I think, you know, like I've said a couple of times, I think we're still going to see satellite dishes on people's roofs. But, you know, being the digital guy in this business, my agenda is certainly going to be one of pushing over-the-top delivery, you know, more devices, you know, your kind of Android-type boxes, being able to run lean-back experiences of DSTV Now is certainly, you know, high on our agenda.
Oh, that's interesting. Are you planning to bring your own box for DSTV Now to the market?
Not necessarily our own box,
okay.
But certainly lean-back versions of our application.
Right.
So, you know, right now you've got your iOS and Android versions of DSTV Now, and they're kind of mobile optimized
yeah.
and tablet optimized. You know, we need to start optimizing those for, you know, the Apple TVs and the Androids of the world.
Right.
That's not to say, you know, we will develop Android boxes.
Yeah.
But we certainly need to have DSTV Now available for an Android type environment.
Yes.
And you know, that's well within our sights over the next 5 years. So.
Okay.
I think that's where it's going to go. It's exciting. It's really an interesting time in you know, in television. You know, we've spoken about the golden age of television for many years. For me, this is, you know, this digital revolution that we're seeing really is another, you know, part of that that golden age, and it's exciting to be part of it.
And you're right at the forefront of it in South Africa. And as a DSTV Now user, I'm going to be watching your developments with a great deal of interest.
Great. I'm happy to hear that.
Graham Cumming is Head of Digital Media at MultiChoice. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tech Central podcast today.
Thanks, Duncan. My pleasure.